Welcome back. 26 minutes past 9 o'clock. Be careful what you post on social media, because of course it's not just social media anymore. It could come back to haunt you, especially when you as a local woman discover that after she claimed she was driving a car when she crashed into a tree, a quick search on social media by her insurance company found a post of her son and his account stating that he had in fact crashed a car. Can you imagine that that claim was rejected? Yes, you are right. Insurers are now combing through your social media posts if they suspect anything dodgy with a claim. Joining us for more on the story is Peter Nkuni, a senior assistant ombudsman at the Ombudsman for Short-Term Insurance. He joins us now from Centurion. Peter, thanks so much. It's not just Twitter anymore. It's not just Facebook anymore. It can be a useful tool of people trying to delve into what you were actually doing on your weekends and what you were, where you actually were when you crashed your Mercedes-Benz.
Good evening, Lester. Thank you for having us. It is correct. A lot of us have a tendency to want to show off what's going on in our lives, and sometimes that catches up with us in ways that we never imagined, like the examples that you have given. And one gets exposed where the claims may be rejected purely because there is evidence out there which is contrary to the statement that they would have made to the insurance company.
Do insurance companies have specialized units, specialized departments that says, okay, we have a bit of a dodgy claim here, or a claim that we are going to question? Can we go search this person's social media history? Is it like a group of detectives in some office of an insurance company?
Yes, the developments have been such that over the years, a lot of insurers have adopted a practice where, apart from your administrative staff, you would have very specialized claims consultants, some of whom would do a minor investigative work, like telephone calls and just checking up on facts. And then you also have fully fledged investigative units within a lot of insurance companies. So you'd find, for example, somebody that specializes in building claims. Mm-hmm. So it might be a quantity surveyor or a civil engineer or somebody like that. And they specialize in that type of claim. And then you could also find somebody that is an expert in motor mechanics. And they then assist in terms of investigating, let's say, for argument's sake, your motor warranty policies. And depending on which specific area of expertise, then people will be allocated to the relevant departments using their expertise to investigate and validate claims.
In my imagination, I have this thought of almost like a CSI type office in an insurance company, people combing through records and combing through people's social media. because it's a serious business. It's a multi-billion rand business, and obviously insurance companies don't want to be cheated.
That's correct. There are instances where it really gets to that level. Sometimes you find in very high quantum claims where a lot of facts and circumstances seem to be dodgy. Mm. They go and get forensic investigators. You also have instances where they make a use of accident reconstruction experts. So these guys can work backwards to see what happened, what caused the accident, and all of that. If you think of instances where there are fire claims as well, you have forensic fire investigators that can go and tell you this is where the fire started, this is how it probably started, whether an accelerant was used, whether this looks like a fire that was started deliberately by somebody, or if it is something that may have started due to some mechanical fault or something like that. So it does get quite technical. And yeah, they give it their best, depending especially on the circumstances and the costs that are involved. Sometimes it is also suspected that it might be the work of a syndicate. And they go around and infiltrate whatever they need to in order to gather those facts and make findings.
But Peter, why do people think they can get away with it? Maybe it's because many of us have, I'm not including myself there, but many of people that we know have gotten away with a bit of a overclaim here, or a leaving out a little bit of information there. It's because some of us have gotten away, and therefore many people believe that they can get away with it.
Of course, there'll always be people who get away with certain things. And I can tell you, even in our office, sometimes you get a complaint against a particular insurance company. And even as you're investigating this claim, you can see that there are some things that just don't add up. Mm. But because there isn't evidence that the insurance company can provide, you eventually have to say to the insurance company, pay up, because there's no evidence suggesting that there's something fraudulent that took place, or that the insured doesn't deserve to receive a payout, even though, there are some suggestions here and there to that effect. And out of that, a lot of people then think, no, because I know of somebody, a close friend or whatever, that has gotten away with it, I'll also try my luck. But you might be the unfortunate one that gets to be caught out, and the consequences are rather dire.
Because there is an ongoing adversarial relationship when it comes to customers and their insurance companies. Me, myself, I pay my car insurance every month. And I haven't claimed for a couple of years. So the next ding I get, I want them to sort it out immediately. And they're going to pay my full worth. Because why? For the last 10 years, I've been paying my insurance premiums without any hassle. And now you want to give me the third degree. You want to send in accident reconstruction experts. It does seem to be a bit of an adversarial relationship, a lack of communication between clients and the people who insure them.
Yeah, and I think a lot of it probably stems from our misunderstanding of the relationship between us as consumers and the insurance companies. Because from the picture that you painted, your understanding would clearly be that you feel entitled to a payout purely because you've been paying for a long time. But what we don't realize is the nature of this thing that we have with our insurer is that, let me give you this example. I could buy a car today, take delivery of it, and let's make it interesting. Let's say I have lots of money and I go and buy a million rands worth of car and I take delivery today. Before I've even paid my first premium to the insurance company, as I drive off, I am a little bit careless or whatever the case, and I bump into your car. My car is written off and yours is written off. Just because there was already an agreement in place saying that should I be involved in an accident, my insurance company will sort me out. What that means is that they will have to probably buy me a new 1 million rand car to replace the one that I've just written off. They will probably have to pay you and fix up your car. If it is also a write-off, that could also be another million rand or more. And yet I haven't even paid a cent. And when I have the new replacement car, I don't necessarily have to insure it with them. I can shop around and find that somebody else provides 100 rand cheaper premium, and I decide to go with them. Now, imagine what that means. What that means is that those of you who remain with that insurance company are going to foot the bill for the million, the 2 million rand that my insurer paid out. And it becomes more costly for you, those that remain the clients of that company. And once people have that kind of an understanding and appreciate that, it's money coming from the 10 of us paying for the 11th guy that had the misfortune of being involved in an accident. Mm. Then you understand that, no, the money is not necessarily sitting somewhere accumulating. This month it's my turn to have an accident. Next month it's yours. The following month it's somebody else's. And we all eventually end up benefiting. And some little bit might mean that our premiums don't necessarily increase every single year. But if we all claim all the time, so if you think of it, let's say in a year, every single month, every one of us claims and we claim more than what we have paid in, you can already see that that whole system is going to collapse at some point. And I think that is one of the things that gives us this impression that because you have paid for 12 months, it's a long time, and therefore they must pay, even though your claim may not necessarily be a valid one. And that is not what it's supposed to be. They must pay only if your claim is valid and it's in line with what they undertook to cover and what you understood and contracted for them to cover you for.
We are speaking to Peter Nkuna. He is a senior assistant ombudsman at the Ombudsman for Short-Term Insurance. We are talking about insurance companies now also monitoring your social media to see if what you are saying is actually the truth, going back in your posts to see if you weren't actually at the party the night you said that someone came out of nowhere and dinged your car, and questions that they could ask you. But Peter, just finally, is denying or your claim the most that the insurance company can do, or could your level of fibbing, your level of telling lies, be to such an extent that the insurance company could decide to lay criminal charges against you?
It definitely can get much worse. A lot of times, the policy will entitle the insurance company to not only decline the claim itself, but there's also the possibility that your policy can also be cancelled or voided. And that on its own also has follow-throughs in that among some of the consequences could be that once you've been cancelled, all future prospective insurance companies may not want to do business with you, which then leaves you exposed. One of the other things is also what you mentioned, that some of them may then want to pursue criminal charges against you and have you prosecuted. It is sometimes, in my personal view, unfortunate that doesn't happen often enough, because as a consumer, if that doesn't happen, it impacts me negatively, in that what's likely to happen is I'm going to have to pay higher premiums. Whereas if people that were tending to behave fraudulently were being prosecuted all the time, they would be taken out of the system, hopefully, and the rest of those who conduct their businesses fairly with the insurance companies would then not necessarily have to pay as much of high premiums as they would.
But Peter, before we let you go, we have some people who have called in to ask you some questions. Quinn in Kales River, you have a question for Peter.
Hi, good afternoon. Thank you for your time, Susie. Well, my car, the policy is, the only is that your car must be under lock and key at your residence. But I happen to be at another residence that we were doing work there. It's not my permanent type of stuff. I'm not staying there, and the car was in front, but the car was locked. And, of course, the key was in my pocket. And then the car got stolen from there. But it's almost like if you're getting hijacked, if your car is not under lock and key, then you're not covered, but that's not part of the policy wording. So now they're using that technicality that the car wasn't under lock and key. But you don't go park it under lock and key if you're in front of a restaurant having a meal. You can't, you know, it's not always possible.
Quinty, thanks so much for the question. The question regarding under lock and key, it's at your own residence where you confirm whether you have a garage or a lock gate. It's different if you are staying over at someone's night, at someone's house for a night. Is that the basis to deny a claim, Peter?
No, it is definitely not. Something doesn't sound right from the facts that have been presented. The only thing that I can guess where something like that may be legitimate would be if I, as a consumer, promised my insurance company that my car is parked in a locked-up garage overnight at my residence every day. But, in fact, I stay with my girlfriend and I park my car overnight outside in the street every single night. Obviously, the amount of risk that the insurance company is undertaking to take and what it is in fact carrying are not the same. Mm. And because I would have provided the insurance company with false information, the company would be entitled to declare my liability, my claim. But if it's a question of me staying in the same place that I promised my insurance company, but on the one night when I decided to visit a girlfriend or a friend or a parent, and that's what happened. Mm. And on that same night, I happened to lose my vehicle. It would not be correct for the insurance company to decline that claim. And I would encourage the caller to contact our office. Let's investigate that, and perhaps you might be able to get that claim paid out.
And at the end of the day, it's best to be as honest as possible with your insurance company. Tell them whether or not you have a garage. Tell them that, yes, I stay at my house most of the time, but on 3 days out of the 7 day week, I do also stay at a partner's house. And this is what the facilities are there. Pete Nkuna, thanks so much. Senior Assistant Ombudsman at the Ombudsman for Short Term Insurance. Thanks very much for joining.